Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. What if you had a business that was bleeding cash and underperforming employees and a lot of tension and, oh my goodness, you felt like you were in a paycheck prison? Well, that might describe you. Maybe you have a well-paying job, but you can't not stop working because if you stop working, then nobody makes any money. Well, I don't want you to be stuck in that position. And if you have that, well, what if I was able to tell you that there's a magic man who could come along and find hidden cash profits in your business? Well, it's not me, but I'm going to introduce you to him today. Hi, my name is Craig Ballantyne. I am the host of the Early to Rise radio show. And we're always talking about helping entrepreneurs grow their businesses, get more money, have more freedom. And today we're going to have a difficult discussion. I'm going to ask you some adult questions. You're going to hear some amazing stories of businesses that were on the brink, families that were on the verge of divorce, and how these questions can totally change the game, make you profitable, put six figures of cash in the bank, give you that room to breathe, so that you have a greater impact on your life, on your community, on your team members, and on the world. And we'll talk about the 1% give back challenge as well. So again, I'm Craig Ballantyne, host of Early to Rise Radio. And my guest today is Rob Hanley. Rob Hanley is a dear, dear friend of mine. He's come to my Toys for Tots events. He's come to my workshops three times. And he's a guy that I go to. I call him my numbers man because he will help me find money in my business. He'll help you find money in your business by cutting expenses and increasing your profits. So let's jump into the conversation that Rob and I had. Rob's an Aussie living in Lisbon, Portugal, of all places, but he works with businesses around the world. And he's going to be a name that you are going to remember for a long, long time. Rob, my man. Hey, listen. Are you telling me, hey, that it is possible to find money in almost any broken business? And by broken business, you know, what I think of that is like one that has revenue, but no profit. Like people aren't keeping anything.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's crazy. Is what happens is when we're focused really hard on building a business, you know, whether it's the first 100,000, first million, 10 million, 20 million, it's always the same case as we're so busy being in the operations themselves that we haven't had that opportunity to step back and say, hey, you know, what's happening? Do we still need these expenses? Can we beat down these subscriptions? Can we negotiate better deals with our suppliers? And on the other side of it, can we just actually squeeze out more in each transaction and get free money on the advertising costs we're already spending? Every single business has hidden money in it, whether it's a $20 million, $100 million business or one that's just getting started.
So we'll definitely jump into some examples of that because I think it's very important for people to see some real world examples. But I know for sure you ask the right questions. And I also hear from thousands of people that are just in that position. And oftentimes, like some of the things you mentioned, those are adult conversations, right?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Like it's not the usual thing where someone sits down and goes, oh, you know, I want to make more money with my business.
You just need a funnel.
Yeah, just throw one more shiny object on top. If you just do this, that stuff doesn't work, man. Like that's actually how so many people end up in this spot, like this spot in the first place. They've kind of gone in, they've done a bunch of random action, gotten a bunch of random traction, and then all of a sudden they're working, you know, 12, 16 hours a day. Their wife is threatening to leave them. Sometimes their wife does leave them or their husband leaves them because they're running a broken business and it's just them spinning the plates.
One of the things that I see so much of, you know, coming from the fitness industry and having a lot of background there, is that most people get into the fitness industry because they like it. They become a personal trainer. They're making a good wage as a personal trainer. And then they think, I'm going to go and open a business. And the next thing you know, they're in a prison for the next 15 years.
That's it. They've built themselves a high-paying job, but they haven't got those fundamentals in place. They haven't got the systems. They can't scale. They haven't got growth. And they end up being stuck on the treadmill.
Well, I would say that a lot of these gym owners actually even go from having a high-paying job as a trainer to actually making less than the people that work for them. And it just drives them nuts because, you know, now they're at risk of losing their house and their marriage and all these sort of things.
Yeah. I mean, a few years ago, I don't know actually if you know this, but back in 2014, I explored doing marketing services to CrossFit boxes. Yeah. And I spoke to a lot of CrossFit box owners and ended up, you know, deciding not to pursue the business. But one of the things that came up time and time again was I was a trainer. So I thought, if I just open a gym, I'll make tons more money. But now I'm working four times as long and earning one quarter as much.
Yeah. And this goes across every industry that, you know, we got plumbers listening. We have writers listening. We have manufacturers listening. You know, we're going to talk about some businesses that you've worked with in the supplement space and the clothing space. And when these adult conversations are not had, they're like any little molehill that builds up to a mountain and becomes very, very problematic. So why don't we just walk through some of the hidden pain that we are inflicting upon ourselves. And actually, before we do that, I want to give a little plug to you that you have really great Instagram stories and Instagram content on this. So everybody, if you do use Instagram, make sure you follow Rob at Rob Hanley. That's H-A-N-L-Y on Instagram. But now, Rob, back to the question. Yeah. What are some of the hidden pains that we are inflicting upon ourselves that we really don't need to be?
Yeah. So, I mean, one, and we'll get to the details of it later, but one of it is selling at all costs. So this whole idea of, you know, just more revenue, it is crazy because if the revenue is not profitable, what you end up doing is actually losing money to sell stuff. And this isn't like a strategic loss leader front end product. It's that we buy products, you know, cogs, whatever, raw materials, or even software, and we start selling it. And we never actually check whether we're making a profit. All we're doing is checking our bank balance at the end of the day. So that's one of the first hidden pains. And then that creates this.
Well, there's also in that, Rob, there's also most people don't, they say, oh, are we breaking even on the ads? Okay, great. You're breaking even on the ads. And then you have to deal with all the stuff that you mentioned. But then it's like, oh, you also have like three people on staff at this much salary. Like you might want to think about that too. And all the energy and all the headaches. So like if you actually did nothing in a lot of cases, you know, the classic Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger approach to investing, you might be better off.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. This is the catch. You've got to use the right metrics to measure what you're doing. So someone might say, oh yeah, we're breaking even on ads. And I say, well, what does that mean? They say, well, you know, we spent $30 and we got a transaction for $30. And that's even before you put in the costs of the book. That's before you've put in the cost of the transaction. And as you said, labor, rent, utilities, all these things, and it can be super misleading. You know, I had a company that I was recently speaking with who found out that after 3 years of working with a media buyer, the media buyer had been using the wrong metric to report to them. So they had been bleeding money, and because they hadn't been checking their finances properly, all of a sudden they found themselves, you know, 6 weeks from death's door kind of thing, because they weren't checking the metrics and they weren't using accurate metrics. So that's a huge hidden pain. Is if you're not tracking with the right metric and then you're not tracking your finances, it's a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. So anything else that, you know, in over hiring, I know that was a mistake that I made when I was younger, or, you know, some of the ways that more sophisticated businesses do business, like, you know, with your payment terms, but, you know, a newbie to business would never think of.
Yeah, sure. So I think one of the ones you mentioned hiring, first of all, I was doing some just quick check-ins for a client today, just with some potential candidates for them. And it's being baffled by the beautiful flowery language that someone has and not being willing to actually get down and almost try and alienate the wrong person for the job. And what I mean by that is if you don't go in with a clear scorecard, you know, here's what I need done. Here's the job to be done. Here's how I'm going to measure success. And here's the kind of values that I need that person to have and the skills I need that person to have. You're going to hire the wrong person. And then you're going to hire a bunch of people to do a bunch of disparate jobs, and you're never going to build a sort of internal flywheel and build up that momentum. I think that's a huge issue. And the other one is actually, and this comes from Aisha Kazides, is not asking yourself, what behavior am I reinforcing here? So I remember we sat in on a quarterly meeting a long time ago now, a couple of years back, and we were talking about an employee who was glib. And the thing was, no matter what feedback loop was put in front of this guy, what behavioral recognition or reward, he just was glib and he had to go. But the fact that we were having that discussion put us in the top 1% of business owners, you know, in the SME space in particular, because we're saying, hey, we're trying to reward this guy. Nothing works. It doesn't work.
I just had a conversation at one of my workshops on the weekend, and we were talking about the guy's VP. And so this is like a $5 million business. He's paying the VP $125,000. And after all the stuff that the owner was doing, I'm like, well, what does this guy do? And he goes, well, not much. And I go, well, why do you keep him around? He goes, man, you know, he's got a family. Wait a minute. You're paying a guy $125,000 and he's stealing health and family time from you so that you feel bad firing him because of his family. And here's the thing is the guy, he met him at a networking thing, and the guy owned a digital marketing agency, and the guy shut down his digital marketing agency to go and work for my client. So obviously he's not that good of an owner. He's a good salesperson. And so you see this, and it was funny because then I said, okay, everything you just said there, now pretend it's not you and pretend that it was somebody saying that to you. Now what's the decision? It's like, yeah, I know.
Yeah, there's a really good story, man. There's a really good story by Cameron Herold who talks about meeting with a mentor one morning, and the mentor says to him, hey, you know, so how's everything going? He's like, oh, I've got this guy, I got to let go. How long have you had him and known that he's the wrong fit? Oh, you know, like 6 months. 6 months. Yeah, 6 months. So when are you going to let him go? In the next week or two. Not soon enough. His mentor cuts him basically down to doing it that day or something, you know, like in the next hour, and then calling him. And he says to the guy, listen, you know, you've been stealing from the guy for 6 months. He's been stealing from you for 6 months. This just isn't a good fit. Like, be an adult, make the decision, remove the guy from the organization. It's such a simple thing, but we're so scared of confrontation and we don't back ourselves that we end up keeping bad employees around. I have someone I worked with recently who has a finance person who can barely use Excel. Now that person's on the chopping block, but that was a fight to get that firing done. That is not what you want in your finance role, is it? That person's got to be able to use Excel.
I was at a Grant Cardone event, and Grant Cardone made a guy fire somebody. So the guy was in the room. So there's 300 people in the room on a Sunday morning at 9 o'clock in the morning. And Cardone gets, you know, basically bullies this guy into calling the guy at home. The guy's still in bed, and he makes him fire him in front of 300 people. But very similar argument to what you were making. Like, the guy's been stealing from you. He's checked out. Like they said, they, you know, in a series of questions, they said, you know, this guy's been checked out for like over a year. And you know, he wouldn't let him go because he knew if he went home, he wouldn't fire him. So he made it do him in person. And I think that everybody listening, you've probably got somebody in your world, whether it's a personal relationship or a professional relationship, that needs to go, and you don't want to do it for XYZ reasons, but it's killing you in one way or another. And the thing is, like, if it was somebody else who came to you with that thing, you would, with no emotion, but yeah, you got to fire this person from your life. So you need to understand that you need to have those mindset changes in order to
It's that, like, the situation this guy found himself at the Cardone event, that's being reactive. He was waiting for the crisis to come, and it hit this break point. As you know, he said, being there for a year, something that we should all be doing, whether you're an employee or you own the business or you're the CEO or the GM or the BM, whatever it is, VP, you should always be asking yourself, you know, what crises are coming down the line? Who is not an enthusiastic rehire? Who needs to go? Because the longer you wait to make that action, the more you justify the fact you haven't done it. And that person stays for longer, and it compounds in a negative way. And you just make it worse for yourself and everyone else. I mean, you're right. Cardone was, from the outside, I was like, ooh, that sounds terrible, making a guy fire someone at a live event. But really, was the bloke going to do it otherwise? Probably not. And he'd already wasted a year of both their times. So
don't. And the guy's response, guy's response on the other line of the phone was, oh, okay. It wasn't even like he didn't try and save his job.
Yeah, he knew.
Yeah.
He knew. He'd been coaching and collecting checks.
Yeah. And I love the one quote that you mentioned there, or the one piece of advice you said, would you enthusiastically rehire the person? So dive a little bit deeper into that, and then we'll talk about how businesses can be fixed.
Yeah, no worries. So I think one of the things that happened in business is we're so stressed out, or we're so eager to hire someone, that we bring someone on. And we go through this whole hiring process, which all of us know, if we do it properly, if we use tools like Top Grading or Hire Smart from the start, or we invest all this time and energy and effort, and then we finally get them in, we finally get them on board. It's like I don't know how to describe it, but they slowly get the tentacles everywhere, right? Like an octopus, they just kind of wrap in. And if we don't take care of that quickly, we end up with this person who just is around, and they're not really that good. But then what happens is it creates a lower standard for everyone else, because they see this person coasting and just kind of getting along, so why should they work hard? You know, the A players resent the fact that you allow this kind of behavior to keep going. So they don't want to show up. They'll probably leave to go to a more challenging environment in which they might flourish. And then you're left with a team of B and C players, and it slowly degrades. So the key behind the enthusiastic rehire is being really brutally honest about the fact that you're building an asset to achieve an outcome. It's a machine. That machine is run by systems, automations, and people. And if you would not enthusiastically hire someone, again, rehire them, then why are they there in the first place? And why are you putting up with that? Why are you allowing yourself, your friends, your family, your business to suffer because you're too lazy to pull the trigger? That's what it
means. Yeah, scared, lazy, whatever adjective you want to use, for sure. So who can fix these businesses, and how does the business get fixed?
Yeah, so I mean, I myself obviously am a fixer. That's based on a mixture of education and experience more than anything else. The fixer is basically someone who can come in and do a turnaround job, or can consult as an external set of eyes, an interim CEO, a fractional CEO, and be able to give that guidance to the business owner, the director, CEO, GM, whatever, and walk them through the process to essentially stop any bleeding of cash. You know, so many businesses that I've looked at, even just in the last few months, they're bleeding cash and they don't know why. And I can run it through a tool that I've built and find out exactly where that cash is disappearing to. And within 30 days, we can completely flip the bleeding, and then we can not just stem it, but we can be stacking cash in the bank. You know, once you've got the fundamental of cash, go on. Shoot.
I was just going to say, we're going to walk through an example of that at the end, which has been incredible what you've been able to do, but go ahead. Like flipping the cash situation, the balance sheet, it's almost like you're doing magic, because you're not increasing revenue like by putting in a new funnel. You might be increasing revenue through some systematic changes, but you're essentially taking the numbers that exist and you're taking it from bleeding red to having it into the black. And, you know, that's the accounting term. Black Friday is, you know, when most business, a lot of businesses become positive. So, I mean, what are the secrets here, guru?
Yeah. Well, here's the secret, man, is that everyone focuses on putting more revenue in. Push, 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 more. But the thing is, if you're putting good money into a bad machine, it just chews it up and spits it out. So every business I fix, I work backwards. I go through to the very last step. We work through the financing cash flow, investing cash flow, operating cash flow. Once we sort that, then we get into the profit side of things. We beat down the P&L. We try and get rid of as many of those expenses as possible, renegotiate them, change terms, go back. And only after we've done that do we even go and look at the revenue itself. So that can be a SKU analysis. You know, how much of this stuff we're selling is profitable on a per unit basis once we cut it across all expenses. Then we can go look at transaction size. And at this stage, like, we still haven't built a funnel. We haven't launched an advertising campaign. We haven't done anything fancy. I've just gone and looked at the operations of the business and changed what's being done and changed how it's being done. And once you've got this clean, lean machine, then you can go pour gasoline in the tank. Then you can go fire off. But there's always this, you know, one more funnel magic trick. But really, that's just one more funnel that's going to give you a little bit longer, but the pain's still going to come.
You're just one funnel away from more nightmares.
Yeah, right. Just make your business more complex and make the finances more challenging.
And your numbers redder.
Yeah, I love a good red number.
Well, I mean, you do, because you love a good turnaround. No,
I do.
I love the way that you describe yourself as the fixer, much like I describe myself as a chess master. I move people to the winning position. Now, what you do is you turn things around. What are the skill sets and natural talents and experiences that allow you to become so great at that? You become my personal rain man, as I call you.
A lot of mistakes, to be honest, like a lot of actual getting in the trenches and learning stuff along the way. So I've been, whether it's a profit share partner, a business partner, or a complete owner of everything, as well as consulting on everything from CrossFit boxes through supplement companies, software businesses, publishing companies, in different markets and different industries. And what that's allowed me to do is get a huge volume of exposure to different business operations. Then there's the education side, you know, through experience itself, as well as actually going out and reading this stuff, you know, doing everything from reading the biographies of a guy, for example, Steve Miller, who did a series of turnarounds in the US, or reading the story about how Lee Iacocca got involved with Chrysler, looking at these stories about these public and private companies and how they fix these problems. And not just in a, hey, financial engineering 101 way, but also in a way where they respect the people who are part of the community who rely on these businesses. So it's really about collecting those case studies, because at the end of the day, while there is a process, every turnaround is different. every situation is different. That's the thing. They call them special situations for a reason. So you start to build up these this sort of case knowledge, right? You read, you learn, you adapt, and then you get to go apply it. So each time I work with a company, and even if I'm just having, you know, you and I will go for a walk after an event, and I'll be running your business now conversations through this entire case study to see what might fit, what might suit your business. And then I'll be talking
to someone else. The questions are, you know, are uncomfortable, but very valuable. And so certainly it's like an interrogation, but very much like the interrogations I do at my workshops, you know, making people answer questions that they don't think about on their own, which is why they are in that problem, right?
Yeah. I mean, and this is the thing. Of course, we all end up in this scenario, right? We get stuck in the weeds. We're trying to build a business. We're trying to run a business. You know, you and I have spoken before about this idea of review and response. You have to stop and take stock. And one of the skill sets that I've been able to develop is knowing what to take stock of, right? You come to me and you basically give me a piece of paper and you say, hey, I think this is a map. And then I look at it through, you know, a special magnifying glass and say, ah, cool, dig here for gold. This is the spot you want to dig for. Why have you digged over there and not over here type stuff? And that's the skills that you develop. And then you just more exposure, find more broken businesses. You get to understand why each business that's broken in its own special way is broken in that way, which helps you more rapidly diagnose those businesses. And I think that's the last skill is a few years ago, I was a part owner in a medical publishing company. And one of the guys that we published was always talking about this concept of root cause. And what is the root cause versus the symptom? And the idea was that in the medical industry, typically when you have a patient, someone comes in and says, oh, you know, I've got a sore throat. And they say, here, take this medication that numbs your throat. But no one ever stops and says, well, why do you have a sore throat? You know, has this happened before? What did you do recently? What was the event or action that resulted in this? And maybe if we did that, we'd find out that every time you ate a burrito with sour cream, the sour cream maybe gave you some form of inflammation. And so instead of numbing the throat every time, we could just stop you from eating sour cream and the problem would never occur again. And that's the other part, is being able to analyze these companies in such a strategic way and understand the complexities behind them that we can get to that root cause and go, no more of that, let's change that operation.
Well, here's the thing. So, you know, we were joking about funnels before and everybody thinks more revenue is good. And I'm a kind of guy who just loves to think about driving revenue, sales, 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 drum up business. Well, what is wrong with that? What problems does that generally lead to? And how are those things specifically fixed? Because I think a lot of people are in that mindset, at least hopefully, they're in the mindset of selling, selling, selling. So how does a business get fixed in that way?
Yeah. So it's a really interesting question because you know, my background, I got started doing direct sales when I was like 18, 19, signing up people on the street for charities. You know, I believe in the sales mantra. But the key is actually knowing if you're selling something profitable. And a lot of the time what we think about is this sales entity is sitting separately. But for guys like you, it's really important to look at what are you selling and what's the profit per unit on what you're selling? Like, is this SKU, is this line item actually profitable? Now, a lot of people, especially in the direct response world, will start bringing up things like lost leaders and, you know, oh, total lifetime value of a customer, all this stuff. And that's true. But what if you just got rid of that one expensive product that was eating more than it cost, or, you know, eating more than it cost the customer, and opened up your profit margin? Because I really care more about the marginal net worth of a customer than the gross revenue per customer. And I think that's the real key thing, that is, if your goal is to drive up sales, know what profit target you're shooting at. You know, small business owners would really benefit. I mean, you know, what's his name? The guy who wrote Profit First.
Mike Michalowicz.
I mean, that's a great book because it's like, hey, go set a profit target first. If you haven't set a profit target, you're just going to sell random stuff and get a bunch of random expenses. And that just doesn't work. But if you're a sales guy, which you should be, everyone should be, make sure what you're doing is selling to make a profit. It's a very subtle distinction, but you start looking at all your expenses as, did this acquire a customer or retain a customer? If not, why is it there?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So that is very helpful and kind of gets me back on track and gets me thinking a little bit more conservative. So, you know, you got a lot of voices out there that are saying, you know, spend. So I think it's important for people to look at why is that person saying spend. What's the difference between me and them in how they are running their business? So you've had a huge impact on a lot of people's business and you've mentioned some of your experiences, but what does this then go beyond? If you're able to help fix somebody's business, what are you able to do for the team? What are you able to do for the family of the person? What are you able to do for somebody's freedom essentially? Because so many people are in these paycheck prisons, as I call it.
Yeah. So a conversation I had recently with a pretty wise friend of mine, she was challenging me on, you know, why do we do any of this stuff? You know, in order to do what? In order to achieve what? And it comes down to impact, man. Is if I have a business owner who is struggling and he maybe has a team of, you know, 3, 5, 10 people and he's struggling, the operations suck. His family suffers, his employees' family suffers, and everyone's miserable. If I can go in there and fix the business, and then that gives 10 people a more positive experience who they can go then give back to their communities, then go give back to their families, what ends up happening is it's a virtuous cycle, right? So you look at the next step of that, then it's like, what does that even mean? Well, that means that kids get to spend more time with their parents. Marriages get to last longer because people have time to communicate, energy to communicate, energy to go out on date night and come home after date night. Then you've got people who get to engage with other employees and take an interest in them. You know, one of the things that Gallup always talks about is that a lack of employee engagement is one of the biggest contributors to business failure. And if you've got a ragtag operation that's falling apart at the seams, your employees are going to be stressed, they're going to collapse, and then the business will collapse. And you don't get to have an impact that way. One of the things that I'm focused on at the moment is working with an organization called 1% for the Planet to ensure that businesses which contribute to 1% for the Planet-oriented causes are operating as smoothly as possible, because then the employees are happy, there's more revenue going to these causes, and it's just a bigger opportunity to have an impact for everyone in multiple areas of life. So then, sorry, I know that was a bit of a ramble, but it really is this case of why have a badly run business? It doesn't just stress you out and damage your life. It does it to your employees, it does it to your families, to their families. And then it has this ripple effect where everything you touch kind of starts falling apart. But if we fix your business, if your decision is just to have a small life and have a really nice life in your community and that's it, great. But if you have a great business, you can go do really big things and have a really big impact. You can help a lot of people.
Well, tell us more about the 1% for the Planet. Like, what does that look like in terms of a business being successful? How does that contribute to it?
Yeah. So, okay. 1% for the Planet is a foundation or a group that was started by Yvon Chouinard, the founder of Patagonia.
Oh, okay.
And it's a commitment from businesses to give 1% of their revenues to environmental causes, right? Whether it's clean oceans or forests or animals, whatever. It's their choice. It's a values-driven thing. But for me, the perspective on it is if a business isn't sustainable and predictable and can't grow its future stream of earnings, it can't give back. So if it can't give back, how do things like the Planet going to survive? And if we haven't got a planet, we haven't got a business. So that's kind of how I look at it in a nutshell.
Okay. Got it. So, you know, the impact goes beyond that. Now let's go into like the nuts and bolts of fixing a broken business. Where would you even start? Like, what does somebody need? Because I think a lot of people don't even have most of the tools that you would require. I mean, they don't have them at their fingertips. They will have them.
But yeah.
In order for you to see what's really going on in the business?
Yeah, so great question. The number one thing that I need to help fix a broken business, you know, nuts and bolts, is I need finances. I need, you know, 4 periods and typically years is best of finances, just so we can see what's been happening. And then we start digging into what's going on behind that. You know, what are the marketing metrics? What are the sales metrics? What are the things that have been going on in sort of an anecdotal way? You know, I've got a list of 9 questions that I can ask to employees, for example, to find out their perspective of what's been going on, what hasn't been going on. Once you've got that data, it comes down to 2 parts. The first thing is just analyzing some of the cash conversion cycles and the P&L. What's happened? Where are the operations failing us? And, you know, as we said, we'll come to that case study at the end of the episode where we talk about how that worked out. But once I've dug into that, I can find out where the operations are failing us. And then I can find out where the culture or the team or the management and the reporting are failing us. And it's about then constructing a very simple plan. And this is where I think a lot of people get overwhelmed, is they think they've got to come up with some 120-point plan and have a real detailed thing. The truth is, when I work with a client, I have 5 things max that I really want to be thinking about, and ideally 3. Now, once those 3 things are fixed, I'll go on to the next step of things that are important. But realistically, if we've done a good job on those 3 things, the context will have changed. And so we go back through the numbers, back through reporting, back through results. What's the next biggest thing that needs to be addressed?
Where do you tend to find like the quickest wins and hidden money in a business?
Yeah, sure. So if I had like, let's put it this way. If I had 30 minutes to fix a business, what would I do? How's that work?
Yeah.
It's great. So the first thing I would do is I'd look at how people are collecting bills versus paying bills. And that's the real question of like, how many days does it take you on average to handle each? And a lot of businesses will find that they're financing their customers for no reason and being a really good customer to someone else. So you got to quit that. Next thing is, you know, how quickly do they
turn their... What does that mean?
Yeah, sure. So if I say to you, Craig, I'm going to pay you in 30 days, right? So you've sold me a coaching workshop. I say, yeah, cool, no problems. I'll pay you in 30 days. And then the hotel says to you, hey, Craig, you know, this event that you're doing with Rob, you need to pay us in 30 days. If you pay them immediately and then have to wait 30 days, you're negative cash flow waiting on my check. Ideally, you don't want to pay them until after you've received my money. You want to stretch that out so that you're not covering this financing gap, but you're not essentially running a line of credit to your customers. Now, in some businesses and industries, of course, there's certain norms and terms, but you really want to make sure that you get paid by your customers before you go pay your bills. If you're paying your bills before you get paid by your customers, you've got to change how you collect on your invoices and how you change your bills. It's critical. That is like the very first thing I would do. Second thing I would do is I'd look at the P&L and I would go look at all the subscription services. I would look at anything that was a major line item and I ask myself, can I beat this down? Can I go renegotiate this? Can I renegotiate with suppliers, with vendors? They're easy wins. This is the kind of thing you can sit down for 20 minutes, highlight a bunch of things, send off a few emails and find a few $1,000 a month.
Looking at the expenses.
Yeah. I mean, a great example of that, man, is I met a guy at the retreat last year who had, I think, from memory, like $64,000 a year in recurring software subscriptions. I was like, why are you carrying this? He's like, oh, you know, some of my old clients are on those funnels or, you know, those software. I was like, yeah, that's 64 grand a year. That's, you know, 1.5 employees, really. He's like, yeah, but, you know, just take like an eight hours or something to fix it. I'm like, so you just don't want to make $64,000 in 8 hours. And he's like, oh, when you put it that way, like, yeah, cool. You might have to do 2 days of work and move some funnels over, but you just saved 64 grand. That's cash in your pocket that you can do anything you want with. Why wouldn't you do it? So that's the second thing I do. And then the last thing I look at to find those quick wins and hidden money there, I go look at how do we make more per transaction? What are our upsells and downsells? What are the subscriptions we offer? And then what does our backend marketing look like? It's that quick.
Got it. And you know, just to plug the retreat, you were at the retreat last year. You're going to be at the retreat this year.
Absolutely.
Hopefully get you to do a round table on some numbers and stuff so people can come and catch up with you. So perfectliferetreat.com. If you haven't got your ticket yet, you know, it's going to be amazing to have Rob there again. You've been to a couple workshops and you were very valuable to me after the retreat when we talked about, you know, helping to get more people in my coaching program, and it led to an immediate win. So those are some of the ways we get quick victories and fix those broken businesses. Now, how can anybody go and look at a business with fixer eyes, you know, and without getting your 20 years of experience and requiring your talents and skills and stuff like that? What can most people do right now to get some quick victories?
I mean, the first thing is it's 10 years experience. I got a lot of gray in my beard. I wish it was 20 years experience. I'm a young boy still, Craig. I'm only in my early 30s, you know. But what it is what someone can do to look at a business with a fixer's eyes is the first thing is go take yourself out of your normal business environment, get a printout of all your financials and your data, and then go sit somewhere with a coffee that you wouldn't normally see at all, with a tequila, as I may like to do from time to time, and ask yourself, if this was a friend's business or if this was a disparate business, what would I say is wrong about this? Where is this broken? Where is this ugly? Where is the baby unattractive? And I would start marking those things out. And what you're doing really is you're basically asking yourself, what is going on that I don't like? That's all you do first. Then the second thing you do is say, well, what would I like to happen? What would, you know, an ideal world be happening in this business? And some of these answers, by the way, you do need a little bit of financial education. You've got to be able to read your financials, but most people can do the basics. But once you've got that outlined, you've now got a gap. And now you've got a gap, you ask yourself, well, what caused this gap? What actions aren't happening that should be happening, or what actions are happening that shouldn't be happening? And once you start to cut through that, you will find yourself being like, oh, wow, like, yeah, none of my staff has KPIs they've got to report on. Or I don't really have any management meetings. I don't have a GSNR or one-on-one every week with my direct reports. And then you start solving those problems so that you have the hypothesis that if I change this action, it will affect this result. You pick the 3 to 5 things, like I mentioned earlier, and that's it. You make every dollar sweat. You start getting better results.
Yeah, I like that you use the phrase every dollar sweat. And by that, you just mean like really pouring over the line items, really making sure like nothing's getting away easy, right?
Yeah. It's this case of, I think a lot of people forget what a business is there to do. A business is to turn assets into cash at the end of the day. And it goes through a process of assets to revenue to profits to cash. And sometimes we get so caught up in this, you know, one more funnel will live out your mission and have an impact, that we kind of forget that at the end of the day, it's got to be sustainable. And sustainable is when business produces cash from its assets. So making every dollar sweat means you get a much better return on your capital, much better return on assets.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, once their business actually starts making money, they get pretty free with the cash. And it's very important to be a good steward of your money. And so what's the difference between being really good with your money and being cheap to a fault versus being too spendthrift with the money?
Well, that's a good question. I think from my experience, right, it's the miserable factor, right? So I used to be a pretty frugal guy, and that was something that was drilled into me in my way I was brought up. And I would hem and haw over every expense in any business I worked on, with the exception of media budgets, because I knew they made money. But it was like I had this big blind spot. And I think I actually, I hamstrung some of my earlier business endeavors because of that. I was trying too hard to get the free leads and the free money and all that stuff. But what you have to do is take a step back and say, look, you know, if this investment on a scale of 1 to 10 is, you know, above a 7 in its likelihood to acquire or retain a customer, great. Let me see where else I can spend that same amount of money, and will that give me more customers or will it retain more customers? And then just having that perspective of, I'm investing money to get customers over a 30, 60, 90 day time frame. You know, my favorite example of this is Dawn Zier with Nutrisystems. She looked at how they were allocating their capital and realized that they were churning people after like 90 days. Now 25% of their revenue comes from reactivations because they invested in reactivating old customers. That's a really valuable line item worth having.
There was an article, I was going to send it to you the other day because it involved coffee and profits. So if you might be able to find this, I can't remember what website it was on, maybe Fortune, but it was about this woman named Roz, who's the COO of Starbucks now, and how she made everybody more efficient by analyzing how long it takes to make certain drinks. And then they added more profitable cold beverages. It was really, really interesting how she squeezed a lot of money out of it, and just a very, very smart individual, redesigning the stores so that it takes less time to create some of the beverages and there's less wait time and all this sort of stuff. Really, really fascinating.
There's a really good story. I think this is one that parallels this really nicely about, I heard a story about a guy who went to a pest control company. And what he realized was the time that when you've got a pest control company, the times you can't make money are the times when the trucks are on the road, when they're driving. So he came up with an approach to minimize the time the trucks are on the road and maximize the amount of money they made. And the way it worked was the trucks would drive to a strip mall or to a shopping center, and they would park, and they would solicit, they'd get their first customer, say, hey, we'll come in. And once they'd acquired a customer, they would go and approach every single shop around them and say, hey, listen, you know, I'm here and I'm going to be taking care of Robin Craig's corner store to get rid of all the pests.
But, whoa. Just, we do not have pests in our corner store, Rob.
You're right. Sorry. We're going to be taking care of, I don't know, who don't we like? We're going to be taking care of One More Funnel's corner store because they've got all these pests. You know, One More Funnel has all these pests. So, hey, what's going to happen is these pests are going to run into Robin Craig's pest-free store. And you guys don't want that. So because we're already here, we're happy to give you a 50% discount if you sign up and pay now and do it on the same day. Of course. Yeah, why not? So these guys would go in and line up 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 jobs in the same strip mall. Truck would drive once, get 10 customers, drive to the next location, as opposed to driving all across town and getting 3 done in a day. And it's the same thing you're talking about, minimizing the non-productive, non-revenue producing time through the design of operations. Really creative endeavor and a lot of fun. That can be very profitable.
Yeah, absolutely. So have we covered like steps 1, 2, and 3 are that every business owner should do to start fixing their business? Have we simplified that enough?
Not yet. So let's do that real quick. Is the 3 things every business owner should start doing to fix their business. Number one is, if you do not have accrual accounting books delivered to you every month by a bookkeeper, you got to get that. Right? If you're not looking at your finances, this has got to happen. So let's call that step 0. Step 1 is, you want that data given to you in 2 forms. First is trends. You want to see a monthly trend is pretty appropriate for a lot of businesses. And you want to see what's happening to revenue, profit, cash, et cetera, all these key numbers on a trend basis going back 18 to 24 months. because you want to see if on a long enough timeline, are you improving? Because at the end of the day, if you're not improving, what's the point? Next thing you want to do after you've got the trends with the raw numbers is you want to get the same trends with common size. So if you're listening to this and you've never heard of common sizing before, it's where you make everything a function of revenue, a percentage of revenue. So if we have a $1 million month and we have $200,000 in profit, well, that means it's 20% is profit. It's that simple. So get all your numbers common size because that makes it a lot easier to compare them. It's a lot harder to compare. Is $1 million with $200,000 better or worse than $1,600,000 and $427,000 in profit? Having that comparison on a percentage is really, really important. So that's the second thing. And then the third thing you should start doing is taking time every month to sit down and reflect on those numbers and asking yourself, how might I improve specific result X? How might I stop losing money here? How might I start increasing average order value? Because every business has so many levers within it, but they fall into just a couple of key categories. How do we increase sales? How do we increase profit? How do we reduce inventory? How do we reduce accounts payable? And accounts receivable? And then how do we maximize accounts payable? How do we stretch out that cash? If you can answer those five questions, just reflecting on them each month, whether on a macro or micro level, makes your business a lot more effective, a lot more efficient, and you have a lot more money and you get to spend a lot more time doing the things you enjoy.
Great. And then, so those are really like also the quick victories that the business owner can exploit, or those are the things that you outlined earlier if you only had 30 minutes to fix a business?
I mean, the 30 minutes to fix a business thing is a good start, but if you want really, really, really quick wins is go out and upsell to every order. Like no matter what you're doing, if you've already got three, add a fourth. If you've got no upsells, make sure you go get one. And that can be your product or someone else's. Second thing is always follow up with email. People just follow up with them. If they haven't bought from you for 30 days, follow up, make a special offer. And then that really extends to the fourth thing is you're probably not asking for enough sales. I cannot tell you. I know we said before, it's not all about scaling sales, but if you've got a clean machine and you followed everything in this podcast so far, go make more offers and you will make more money. It is that simple. Most businesses don't make enough offers.
Yeah, it makes sense. So making more offers could be email marketing, could be making them through social media, could be having promotions in store, et cetera, anything like that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I heard of a really good one not too long ago, which was go find the people who bought from you. If you sell, this is actually for fitness gear, but if you find the people who bought from you 12 to 24 months ago and just send them an email, say, hey, how's all the equipment working out? Do you need anything new? And then anyone who opens that email, immediately follow up with a call. You will make money because those people are interested. They've acknowledged that they maybe are looking for something new, and then you're just there to help them out.
Got it. Perfect. All right. So then at what point should somebody just sell stuff off? They have assets, they have parts of the business. Today I was having a conversation with a client of mine, and he has a business that's not turning over any profit, and he just bought it about 6 months ago. And even if it did, he has a bunch of businesses, and even if it did have its best year ever, it would only turn off $25,000 to $50,000 because he is a business partner. I'm like, why don't you just sell it? When should people sell things and move on, and so they can have their energy devoted to stuff better?
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question. I think there's two parts to that question, really. The first thing is goes back to that conversation I was saying I had with that woman earlier about impact. Right. So these guys are spending God knows how much time on $50,000 a year, and they could take the exact same amount of time, energy, and effort and put it into a multi-million-dollar business. It's insane. So really the first thing they got to be aware of is in the consideration is, what am I not doing because of this? What is this stopping me from doing? Because this is on my plate. Then it's got to be a question. It's kind of hard to give a blanket answer, to be honest, because there are factors at play. But from the sounds of the things with this client, it's like he's bought something and he kind of has a crush on it. He likes to play with it.
But well, it's like the employee they won't let go, right?
Yeah. Like most people know. Like realistically, if you have to make an argument to keep something that small, you got to get rid of it. We know. You probably caught yourself doing this. I know I've caught myself doing this with everything from business ventures to people I've dated. You start justifying them. And the moment you give more than one justification, you need to kill it. It's that simple, because what you're doing is defending a bad thing as opposed to shouting the praises of a great thing. So there you go. Maybe that's the little rule of thumb someone can use. If you're defending your decision, you should probably get rid of it. If you're justifying it, get rid of it. It's not the big dog.
Yeah. And I like what Gino Wickman says in Traction. He, you know, when we're talking about firing an employee, which is similar to selling a business, but it's 36 hours of pain versus how long have you let this go that's caused you so much pain, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I actually heard one little other filter that might be useful is I get this from Keith Cunningham, I think. And he's saying, you know, every day you've got to ask yourself, what's better? Is it the price of mutton or is it the price of wool? And if the price of wool is better, then keep the business, keep running it, keep hammering it. But if the price of wool drops, sell the mutton. You don't need the business anymore. A business isn't there to make you feel good or to love you. It's there to make you money. And if it's failing to make you money, get rid of it.
That's a really good analogy. I like that one. Very good. Yeah, very good. So we've kind of been talking about some huge risks to business owners. What are the top ones that people need to avoid?
Yeah, sure. Number one, operating blind. So I had a phone conversation with two business owners the other day who were becoming clients. And one of the things they said to me was, we've been flying blind for 3 years. We're only just getting our books in order. I mean, that's the hugest risk. That it's sort of like trying to fly a plane in zero gravity and not knowing where the mountains are. Like, you're going to hit something sooner or later. So number one risk is operating blind. Number two risk is not assessing what's happening, not taking really honest, ruthless assessment of what's going on. And that means looking at the numbers and being honest about what's happening with them. And I think the third biggest risk is over-optimism. Now, I'm a pretty optimistic guy. I'm pretty upbeat. I really, truly believe that everything works out for the best. But I'm not an idiot, and I'm not going to go take out giant lines of credit to just put off the inevitable. If you are taking out giant lines of credit, taking out giant loans, and you can't support them with productive revenue, A, you shouldn't have been given the loan, but the way the banking system works and SBAs and everything, sometimes you get weird loans. But B, it's just a horrible idea. You're taking on something that's going to kill you in the end. And this is, you mentioned this earlier, your house is at risk, your family's at risk, your kids' futures are at risk. Don't do that to yourself. Just avoid over-optimism and be really honest, because we live in a world right now where capital is free and cheap. And we've seen what's happened with WeWork. We're going to pop out at like, what, a $47 billion IPO, they thought, and now management stepped down. Don't get caught in the over-optimism bubble. I can't explain that enough or express that enough.
Yeah, I think one thing that I see a lot is people saying, well, the market is 100,000 people. If I just get 10% of that market, like, that's not how it works. Like, you don't just get a fraction of a market because you enter into a market. And that is, I called it being a dependent dreamer. Like, you know, over-optimism, same sort of thing. So you mentioned that people being clients of yours. How does that work? Like, does somebody just bring you their spreadsheet and you walk through it? And how long do you work with somebody to turn their business around?
Yeah. So, I mean, I wish that was how it worked. But a lot of the time, it's someone reaches out to me thinking they've got one problem. And it's like someone comes in with a cough and I have to say, all right, cool, let me do a diagnostic with you. Give me 4 years of financials. And then we do a little analysis. And I've built this tool that allows me to get a complete x-ray vision on a company from their financial standpoint, from their operational standpoint. And it pulls all the data and cuts it in different ways from 4 years of financials. And after I've looked at their financials, I also want to have a conversation with them to understand, hey, are you the kind of person who I can work with, right? Like, this is not a technical question. This is a cultural question. Are you coachable? Will you listen to what I say, or are you going to be too pig-headed and want to keep doing things your own way, which is going to drive you off a cliff? And then what I'll do is I'll sit down with them and we'll break through the process or break down the process and be like, right, where are things broken? Where do you see things are broken? What's that costing you? What do you want things to be like? And then does the data support that? And if it does, we'll sit down, we'll work together through a basic plan for 6 months. And the way that works is clients typically have me come out and see them for one day of quarterly planning. And what we'll do in that day of quarterly planning is we'll get very clear on what are the key goals, objectives, the strategy we're going to implement, and the tactics. How are we going to track our progress as well? Then we have a phone call every 2 weeks where we check in and we make sure we're making progress on these goals. And what ends up happening, I've found in my experience, is in the first 45 to 60 days, we do a quick sanity check. Hey, does this all still make sense? Okay, we tweak the dials a little bit. We've learned some new things. Now we've got some more momentum. And then we're off to the races. And that's how, you know, one of my clients, who we'll talk about a little more in a minute, has gone from being pretty close to death's door. He and I were talking about the other day. I was like, look, I didn't want to alarm you when we first spoke, but you were getting pretty close. To now in a position where you can really thrive. Another client of mine managed to do an entire year's worth of revenue in 90 days. Because we keep coming at it with this same approach. It works.
Got it. So let's walk through the death's door to living much better now.
Yeah. So earlier this year, I was actually about to go on a surf trip and I got an email from someone saying, hey, you know, I was told that maybe you can help me with, I think it was some of his customer data or something. I was like, cool, let's have a little bit of a chat about what's going on here. And we started having conversation about, you know, what's going on in the business. And I started to dive deeper and deeper on the phone with him. And I started to realize that this business is pretty unhealthy. And I said, look, you know, I think I might be able to help you. But what I'd really like to do is, instead of just looking at your customer metrics, let's dig into some stuff here. Let's have a look at the finances. So I've just pulled open the email that he and I were talking about. And after he sent over the email, with the finances, I just said, hey, thanks for sending this over. There's definitely an opportunity. And there's two key things I wanted to talk about, which were finding the hidden profit in the existing activities and the operational rhythms for maximizing the performance of the sales team. And then I'd also mentioned in a previous email some cash opportunities I saw. Once we had that plan, it was time to get to work, because this was a multi-million-dollar business that was not profitable in the last financial year. The cash that it had pulled from its operations was around 1.2%, I think, from memory. And it, in the end, turned out to be selling a huge amount of revenue that was completely unprofitable. We did a SKU analysis and found out that two of the product lines were literally eating the profits from the others, which is just why. So what we did is we sat down, we made our plan, and we started hacking away at it. I gave him access to a few tools. And the very first thing we did was similar to what we discussed earlier, is we changed how cash flow was flowing through the business. And what happened was he went from essentially a negative bank account with lines of credit to a bank account that, when I did the last calculation, it grew by 20% every 2 weeks. It just stacked on stacked and stacked. The next thing that ended up happening was, in the course of 6 months, he's now getting more than, I think it's 3 times the amount of cash from his revenue. We've knocked off that 17% of his revenue that was completely unprofitable. And what actually happened is, when we knocked off 17% of his revenue that was unprofitable, we immediately opened up the profits and closed that bleeding gap. Those things alone have now put him in a position where we're able to hit a vision for 5 years from now. We've got like a nice stable ship that's not taking on water. And we're looking to the next 6 months about how we're going to grow the sales side of things, how we're going to find more hidden profit, how we're going to introduce different product lines that are proven to be profitable when we sell them, as opposed to just walking into stores and saying, hey, buy my stuff. Oh, P.S. I lost money. It's a lot easier for us to work together when we have consistent metrics, consistent reporting, and simple tools that reinforce those behaviors. And I'll tell you about that last one. Is, we mentioned this earlier with the guy who wasn't coachable, who's a bit glib. We were talking about behavioral reinforcement. My favorite example is this cash flow booster that I built, which it's very simple. You plug in a couple of certain key financial numbers into a spreadsheet, and then it calculates the cash conversion cycle, which is, you know, it all sounds kind of fancy and complex. So what I realized I could do is, if I just create a graph and one of them has a line that's going downwards over time and the other one has a line that's going upwards over time. And the idea is that over time you want your accounts receivable to go down, and over time you want your accounts payable to go up relative. And all he has to do is track those key numbers, and it will tell him whether what he's doing is working. Does your accounts receivable days match this line? Is it going down too? Excellent. You're doing a good job. Is your accounts payable going up? Excellent. You're doing a good job. And that's how we've taken them to have a six-figure bank balance, as opposed to scratching the surface for nothing. Makes his life a lot easier.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So Rob, the last thing I want to ask before we go here is, yep, if everybody listening could ask themselves one question every single day in your Australian accent, one question, then what would that be? What would that be? And wait, I'll let you think about that first. Got a text message.
Yeah.
Hey Craig, I fired my VP today.
Hey, that is perfect.
I know. The guy did it.
That's a perfect circular piece of this episode.
I know.
I think that really jumps off to the question that everyone should be asking themselves each day. It's two part. It's, what am I putting my head in the sand about and avoiding taking care of? And then, what's the biggest opportunity that exists in the business that we can exploit today? When you take advantage of both those things, you know, so you're cleaning out the gunk and then you're taking the opportunity, you really are just getting rid of the dead weight and leveraging yourself forward. That's how the business grows.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Cool, so repeat that question one more time.
Sure.
Everybody.
So what am I not taking care of? What have I been avoiding and I'm not taking care of that I can take care of today? It will improve the quality of my business. And what is the biggest opportunity available for the business today and how might I exploit it?
Awesome. Wonderful, wonderful stuff. Rob, how can people get a hold of you aside from Instagram at Rob Hanley?
Yeah. So other than getting a hold of me on Instagram with Rob Hanley, the best thing to do is actually send me an email. I am a big lover of email, and that is rob@robhanley.com. Rob@robhanley.com. And if you're lucky enough to know someone who knows me, if that's just the way that our networks work, just get them to give you an introduction, because referrals always go to the top of my pile. I've learned that good people know good people, and I will always jump at those.
Awesome, man. I'm glad you're like me. We're the only two people that like email, and I love it.
Oh, look, man, I don't care if people say email is dead. I live for it.
Yeah. It allows people to really work through their thoughts as they write things out. In most cases, at least how I feel about it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. So awesome. Anything else we need to cover, Siebs, or we got it?
What are you excited about for the next year?
Ooh, I'm really excited about this stuff with the 1% for the planet, because the way that it's working for me is I take on a very small amount of coaching and consulting clients who have business problems that I help them fix. And then I'm also doing these really interesting deals at the moment where I'll come in and do a complete skin in the game deal with someone who's got a business that has the upside that makes it worthwhile, so that I can come in, fix the business problems in return for an equity stake. And then I use all that momentum to contribute to organizations like 1% for the planet, because look, man, I'm a big believer that it's like Pascal's wager, right? If the biggest doubters among us are right and climate change isn't real, I don't really lose anything by making things better. I really just don't lose anything. And if the climate change people are right, which I believe they are, well, I'd really like to be contributing to that being fixed. So I'm excited about that, man. And then obviously the retreat in just a couple months, not even a month.
Yeah. Powerful stuff, my man. I really, really appreciate you. I learned a lot. There's some stuff that I'm going to be implementing just from hearing it over and over and over again. I've listened to you many times. So thank you, my friend, for being here and being on the show.
Thank you for having me, man. I'm glad the beat them over the head method continues to work in our friendship. It always is so effective. Hi, man.
It is.
See you at the retreat.
All right. See you soon, my friend.
See you, brother.
Amazing show, amazing conversation, real adult questioning. I also almost should have gave it a warning before we started, but I want you to understand that no matter what position your business is in, there's money available to you. You can get out of debt. You can go from the red to the black. You can have profits. You can have cash in the bank. And that means you can have more freedom, because what are you doing this all for? You're doing it all for impact and family, community, and a life well lived. So again, contact Rob. Go to rob@robhanley.com or Rob Hanley on Instagram, or just send me a message and I'll get you connected with him, because I love to introduce people to Rob. And if you're at the Perfect Life Retreat, come up and say hi to both of us. And if you're not, go to perfectliferetreat.com right now. Grab your tickets. The event is almost here and I don't want you to miss out on another game-changing opportunity to live your best life. All right. And once you've done that, head over to iTunes, give us a 5-star review. Send me your comments on Instagram @RealCraigValentine and on email, because I love email, at support@earlytorise.com.